بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، والصلاة والسلام على الشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين، ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. That's an interesting inroad, what was just said, into what I wanted to talk about, talking to people. That, for instance, introduction was actually for non-Muslims and not for Muslims. And the reason for that is because non-Muslims have a different criteria that Muslims have. For instance, if I was talking to non-Muslims, a person is given credibility based on his prominence in a society. Often for Muslims, a person loses credibility based on his prominence in a society. So these are very different ways of looking at a person. If somebody in the West met with a leader of a state, that would be seen as often a sign of credibility. In the Muslim world, it's actually often seen as a loss of credibility. And that is very important in understanding the psychology of the people that you're dealing with. The Prophet Muhammad ﷺ said, the best of kings are those who are at the doors of scholars, and the worst of scholars are those who are at the doors of kings. So it's actually, in the Islamic tradition, it's seen as a negative and not a plus. And that is, again, relates to criteria and how we assess things. So that was kind of an interesting side note. But what I wanted to talk about today was looking at two aspects of da'wah. Da'wah is misunderstood by many Muslims to include Muslims. The idea that we make da'wah to Muslims. There is no such thing as da'wah to Muslims, if we use da'wah in the technical term that scholars use it in terms of calling people to Islam. Because Muslims are already Muslim, so they don't need to be invited to Islam. The term that is used for dealing with Muslims who are wayward and need to be reminded, and that includes the majority of us, is called Amr bin Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. It is commanding to good and forbidding evil, or forbidding what is wrong. And so that is what a Muslim does with another Muslim. That has conditions. And that's what Sheikh Yusuf was talking about, this idea of knowledge before you actually engage in da'wah, or in Amr bin Ma'ruf wa Nahi an al-Munkar, in calling people to Islam and in commanding to what's right and forbidding what's wrong. Because there are many people who actually don't know what's right and what's wrong. That is actually a level of knowledge in Islam, to be able to discern between right and wrong. And then an added nuance to that is what is called in Western civilization situational ethics. Because there are things that are wrong in certain situations, they are not wrong in other situations. So we are not Kantian. If people are Kantian, if people have studied Western philosophy, they know about something called the categorical imperative, which is an ethical theory in Western society, that to tell a lie is always wrong and in any situation. Well, that is not true in Islam. There are actually times when it's not only permissible to prevaricate, it's actually considered an obligation. And that would be, for instance, if a tyrant is trying to unjustly kill or persecute somebody, it's actually permitted for you to divert that tyrant away from that innocent person through a lie. And there are many examples of that that can be looked at in the books of fiqh. But generally, lying is a heinous wrong in Islam. Now, one of the things about lying is it relates very much to da'wah. The Muslims, in many ways, before I get into that, what I want to talk about is two aspects of da'wah. Because I would say in many ways da'wah does apply to Muslims today. And the reason I would say that, there are many Muslims that have deviated so far from Islam that even at the basic rudimentary beliefs of Islam that make you a Muslim have been lost on many Muslims. So that in a more traditional period of time, many Muslims would actually be considered non-Muslims because of erroneous beliefs that they hold. Now, time is always taken into consideration, and that's something very important in the Sharia. The Prophet ﷺ, during his early period, The way that he treated people was very different from his later period, not because he changed, but because the level of consciousness and awareness of the people had changed. So for instance, there are many hadiths in which the Prophet ﷺ excused the most gross breaches of courtesy. During the time of the Prophet ﷺ, there was somebody who yanked his coat. He was a Bedouin man. He literally yanked his coat. The Prophet ﷺ was light-skinned, and because of that, a red mark appeared on his neck. And the Prophet ﷺ smiled and dealt with this man in a very beautiful way, partly because he understood he was a Bedouin, and Bedouin are very rough in their behavior, but partly because people are ignorant. And when people are ignorant, there's a different level of understanding. During the time of Imam Malik, somebody once had a very gross breach of adab or courtesy in his gathering. And Imam Malik said something to him, indicating that, and the man came back with an even grosser breach of courtesy. At that point, a group of Malik's teachers grabbed this man's turban, and they used to wear the what's called a tahniq. They wore a turban under the neck, and it had two, what's called the abba, which is the tails of the turban. They grabbed this man's turban and dragged him out of the majlis, or the gathering of Imam Malik. Now, obviously, in this age, that would be unacceptable. But at the time of Imam Malik, the level of knowledge in Medina was so high that this was seen as somebody, for instance, in this gathering, if somebody starts screaming or shouting and became violent, you would want people to come in and control that person, remove them from the auditorium. Well, that's because that's our level of tolerance. As a society becomes more rarefied, the levels of tolerance in terms of breaches of courtesy become lowered, which is a sign, actually, of a high civilization when breaches of courtesy are rejected. And that's why if you look at traditional Japanese culture, very slight breaches of courtesy would have been so gross and so unacceptable that people would actually have to leave the town or the village that it occurred in. And this also occurred in the Arabian Peninsula. There's a famous story about a man who once had such a gross breach of adab that he left the town that he was in. And he missed his town after about 30 years of being away. He missed it for so long, he decided to come back, and he met a young man at the town. The man said, "Where are you from?" He said, "I'm actually from here, but I moved away 40 years ago." And the man said, "Oh, were you here at the time when so-and-so did such-and-such?" And it was his breach. So in those type cultures, they used to actually, things like that were the earmarks of the year. So Muslims today have distanced themselves so far from some basic teachings that to apply the same hadith that we find in the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ that relate to a later time now would be a gross injustice. And this is something that takes knowledge and discernment of understanding the situation, the level of the person that you're talking to, of who's in front of you. There are many people, they have tape recorders and they have pre-recorded messages that they're going to deliver. It doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what your level of education is. This person who's a da'i will come and click, turn on the cassette that's in his brain, and then the same thing comes out. Then he wonders why he keeps getting the same responses from people. Because when you're dealing with a human being, you're dealing with a very complicated creature. Each human being is bringing with him or her an entire history. They're bringing with them their childhood. They're bringing with them their relationships with their parents, which is the first authoritarian experience. And some people have very traumatic experiences with their parents, which leads to a certain response to any type of authority that they see in the world. There are other people that had very dysfunctional family situations with siblings, with their uncles, with their aunts. There are people that are victims of incest. There are people that are victims of child abuse. There are people that witnessed their parents constantly fighting. There are people that were abandoned by their father. There are children that have no legitimacy. They don't even know who their father is, which is another type of trauma. There are people that were raised orphans. So each one of these human beings that you see out there has an entire biography. And if you don't take that into consideration when you're looking at a person, that this is a unique human being that has a unique experience of the world. And while as human beings, we have a common experience in the world, in terms of being human, of being conscious, we have very particular experiences that give each one of us a nuanced perspective on the world. There are some people that the world has been a wonderful place since they got into it.